Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 28th of October. Since President Obama took office, 287 service members have been discharged for being gay, according to the Service Members Legal Defense Network, which supports the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And way over 13,000 service members have been discharged since 1993. A U.S. Senate committee is holding hearings on the military's controversial Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on gays and lesbians. And in an interview with the Army Times that was published this past Sunday, the Secretary of the Army, John McHugh, indicated that the Army would be ready to lift the ban on gays serving openly if both Congress and President Obama decided to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We'll be talking about this issue the first hour of our program, and we'll have several guests with us. Lieutenant Dan Choi is here. He's a West Point graduate and an Iraq veteran fluent in Arabic. He announced that he was gay on the Rachel Maddow show, and because of those words, I am gay, his life changed. He was notified that the Army had begun discharge proceedings against him and was one of only eight soldiers from the graduating class who majored in Arabic. He served for a decade under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a policy that says that American soldiers really are to deceive and lie about their sexual orientation and others, as he says, to tolerate deception and lying, values he believes are completely opposed to what he learned at West Point. Deception and lies poison a unit and cripple a fighting force. He has formed Knights Out, an organization of West Point alumni advocating for the rights of gays and lesbians to serve openly in the military. Lieutenant Dan Choi, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Kathleen. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for being here. Also joining Lieutenant Choi is Denny Meyer. He was born to Holocaust refugees at the close of World War II and became an activist at the age of 13 when he joined an NAACP picket line. He's battled for gay rights, women's rights, transgender rights, and GLBT veterans' rights during the Vietnam era. He left college and volunteered to serve his country in the Navy. He currently serves as the American Vice President of Veterans Affairs, American Veterans for Equal Rights. Denny, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Good morning, Dan.
Yeah, well, you're chipper this morning. Thanks so much.
Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for being with us. Why don't we start with this? I'm not sure how much to make of this. The Army Times interview with the Secretary of the Army that was published on Sunday. The Army would be ready to lift the ban if Congress and the President decided to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Lieutenant Choi, does it take both the President and Congress to repeal this, and was his statement significant?
Well, let me just tell you a little bit about the statement, Kathleen. It is significant. Representative McHugh, he was a congressman from upstate New York. He's a Republican, and he represented the area where I was serving, up around Fort Drum in the 10th Mountain Division. He is a leader, somebody who actually understands and knows soldiers. First-name basis with a lot of the soldiers that I've served with. He understands the issues, and he supports our troops, and he knows that the Army, now as the Department of the Army's secretary, he knows that the Army is ready for this. He looks at all the other countries in the world that have no ban on honesty among their soldiers, whatever their sexual orientation. He says, we can be just as professional as Israel or all of our NATO allies that we're fighting with in Afghanistan. So it's a signal to the rest of the military and to the rest of the country that this Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that forces our integrity and other values such as honesty second to these fantasy ideas that a lot of people are purporting as truth. It's really saying, look, we know what's the truth on the ground. Our soldiers are professional enough. But to answer your question about whether it takes the president or Congress, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm not somebody that knows a lot about legislative stuff. I just know as a an officer in the U.S. Army, in the National Guard, anybody who's in charge of anything, whether it be a platoon leader on the ground or the commander-in-chief, They take responsibility for all those things that happen or fail to happen. And now that you have well over 13,000, Kathleen, that's an entire division. That's half of the surge in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of the soldiers that can be serving in Afghanistan, whether we serve more send more troops there or not. You look at the cost that this has taken on all of our soldiers, regardless of their orientation. It's time for Don't Ask, Don't Tell to end. And our leaders need to step up to the responsibility of it right now.
Denny, are you hopeful that Don't Ask, Don't Tell will end soon?
It certainly appears that way, because the Pentagon and Secretary of the Army and other people are now agreeing with, they're not being neutral as they were 8 months ago or opposed. They're now coming out and saying, we can do this, we should do this, we will do this. So I do anticipate within a year, hopefully, the final signature will be the president's to change this. As Dan said, a significant part of our fighting force is lost every year due to discharges due to homosexuality. In fact, in addition to those who are discharged every year, being from stating or being caught for being gay, there are roughly 3,500 to 4,500 people who simply do not reenlist. Mm. They leave silently, as I did in 1978, even before the policy, when you were simply dishonorably discharged. And these are usually senior NCOs, as I was, leaving because they're tired of serving in silence or under this policy of discrimination. That's a full brigade every year. And if you count just the last 15, 16 years, that's something like 41,000, as Dan was pointing out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the policy will disappear soon. It's not just the Secretary of the Army. It's Admiral Mullen's publication, I forgot the name of it, but recently a colonel published an article saying that the policy has to go. All the signs are happening now. We have a government that has separate branches. So the law was enacted in 93 by Congress. They have to make a law to repeal it. The president has to sign it. The Pentagon, the military, is not a branch of government. However, they have to say that they're willing and able to do it. Our military is capable of a great deal. And so they're now saying, yes, we can do this, because there is no other option. They integrated black Americans starting in 1948 through the Korean War into our armed forces. In the 1990s, they integrated women into our fighting forces. This is just another step toward American progress.
Lieutenant Choi, tell me about the procedure when you announced on the Rachel Maddow show that you were gay. You had already served for a decade under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You were only one of eight soldiers from your graduating class at West Point who majored in Arabic, which is such a valuable thing to have for the wars that we're engaged in right now. What happened once you made that announcement?
Well, Kathleen, essentially just my saying three honest words, on the Rachel Maddow show back in March, I thought that it was going to cause a lot of chaos within my unit. You know, you'd imagine all of the people that are saying, oh, when people come out of the closet, everybody's going to be so uncomfortable, their hair is going to catch on fire, and everybody's going to leave in droves. Because even though these soldiers are so strong and so capable to go to Iraq or Afghanistan and take a bullet for their country, once they know there's a gay person, oh, that's the end of it. So a lot of people, they assume these things will happen. So some part of me, actually, I thought that might happen, too, when I went back to my unit. Nothing happened. So I just assumed nobody watched Rachel Maddow, or nobody watched TV, nobody read the Army Times, nobody knew about any of the things that were going on. I said, this is a big problem. Our soldiers don't keep up with the news. Well, afterwards, a lot of people came up to me and they said, so just in case you think we didn't hear, we know. And just so you know, we think what you're doing is a great thing. There have been gay people in our unit all throughout the Army. Before, we have them now, and we will have them forever. One of the NCOs, the non-commissioned officers, actually came up to me, and he said, "Sir, don't think that you're anybody special. There have been gay people all over this Army. You are not alone." So I was very encouraged, and my commander at my unit was not the person who started the investigation. It actually started at a much higher level, at a Department of the Army level. So when you talk about the enforcement of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when somebody comes out and tells the truth about who they are, a lot of the implementation is arbitrary. And we see not only recently there was a figure that people pointed out, that women and racial minorities are targeted disproportionately and are kicked out at much higher proportions than they are, you know, serving in the military. And so you see that a lot of the implementation can be very random and just based on the type of unit that you're in. I'm an infantry officer, and as in an infantry unit, of course, we only have men. And I'd assume, and a lot of people assumed, that that particular kind of unit would be more difficult to, just say, integrate or you know, basically repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. In fact, I believe the Secretary of the Army mentioned something about that, that he would consider some units and some organizations repealing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policies before others. I believe that makes no sense. In my particular case, I am in an infantry unit, or some of the units that people would assume might have a more difficult time with it, and I saw nothing but support because they all know somebody who's gay in their units. A lot of the people that say repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell won't work, a lot of the military is not ready for it, they're simply out of touch with our military today. 99%, a vast majority of the entire military is under the age of 30, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. The people that serve in the military, going to Iraq and Afghanistan, they're totally cool with it. There's not an issue. And some of these people are creating these fantasy ideas and imposing something really ridiculous on our soldiers. So when I went to the board back in late June that was going to discharge me because people at the Pentagon and Army level served me paperwork, there was this general that wrote me the letter, and that was the first time I had heard anything about the discharge proceedings. They said that by my saying those three words, I had negatively affected good order and discipline for the entire New York Army National Guard. At that point, I didn't realize that saying those words, "I am gay," would have so much power and so much impact that the entire New York Army National Guard was just in disarray. Everybody knew that that was not the case. Everybody that testified said, well, there's no evidence. There's nothing tangible that can show. Nobody has jumped ship. Nobody has left. Nobody has complained. There haven't been issues of harassment or chaos that everybody says and assumes happens. And so I, you know, proceeded to give my testimony. I presented part of my speech in Arabic, and I shared one of the most famous poems of all Iraqi history, Al-Khaylu wa Laylu al-Baydau ta'rifni, Sayfu wa Rimhu qartasi wa Qalamu. And the president of the board, one of the colonels, asked me, "Lieutenant, you're going to have to translate that." Ugh. Because nobody in the entire nobody in the entire building could translate from Arabic to English. And when you consider that on September 10th, 2001, there was a communique, a three-word statement that went to the national security agencies that said simply, tomorrow is 0 hour. But they didn't have enough Arabic interpreters or translators in their offices to translate that very simple warning on September 10th, 2001. It wasn't translated until September 12th. And my question to every single person in the military and in our country is, are we ready to take the responsibility of the next September 11th or anything that happens, are we ready to put our military and our national security at risk because of these fantasy ideas of homophobia that really don't exist?
Tell me, before we go to phone calls, Denny, the atmosphere that Lieutenant Choi describes right now being one of pretty much total acceptance. He had no problems during his time in service. Was that true in the 70s when you were in service in Vietnam, or was it a different atmosphere?
That's just what I was going to talk about. What Dan is describing is really points up the vast generational change in America since the time I served, when I was a sergeant first class in the Army Reserve in the late 1970s. And when I was a petty officer in the Navy in the early 70s, if anybody knew you were gay, you could be killed. In the Navy, you could be murdered and thrown overboard. And in the Army, you could be fragged and shot by your own fellow service members. And if you survived any of that, you'd be interrogated and dishonorably discharged. There was absolutely no question of any rights at all. And in those days, we did what was called serving in silence. You just gave no hint to anybody, and you could not, at risk of your life as well as your career, and if you were dishonorably discharged in those days, you couldn't get a decent job anywhere with that paper. It wasn't that difficult, really, to serve in silence, because in 1968, when I joined the armed forces, everybody lived in the closet anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Inside and outside the military. Today, young people such as Lieutenant Choi have never been in the closet. They become aware of themselves as gay, and they share that with their peers and their friends. Their friends and peers have known gay people in high school and on television. It's just something people could care less about. And so it's a totally... Today, people do not serve in silence. Generally speaking, at the unit level, as Dan was pointing out, people know they could care less. It's senior administrators and politicians who are cynically taking advantage of ideology and preying on people's prejudices that maintains this policy. At the unit level, the young people serving today could care less. In 2005, there was a survey of thousands of Afghan and Iraq American combat veterans returning from service overseas, and 78% said they could care less. And if they knew somebody who was gay, the percentage was even higher. So it's just there's a whole change of progress in America today. In 1948, when President Truman made an executive order integrating blacks into the armed forces, people came to him and said, "You can't do that. Our young men can't shower with a black man and certainly can't take orders from one." And, of course, it took Colin Powell 40 years, since he was born at about that time, to overcome all that institutionalized discrimination to lead our armed forces as chairman of the Joint Chiefs. In the mid-90s, when Clinton was going to integrate gay people into the military, people came to him and said, "You can't do that. We can't shower with gay people, and we certainly can't take orders." Well, they've been doing so, and we've been doing this ever since the Revolutionary War, when Lieutenant General Friedrich von Steuben trained the Continental Army to defeat the British in the Revolutionary War. And we've been serving alongside and giving orders all along, and it just hasn't been an issue.
Let's welcome phone calls for our guests joining us the first half hour of our program. First Lieutenant Dan Choi, West Point graduate and Arabic linguist. He's an Iraq War veteran. He served under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy for 10 years when he announced on the Rachel Maddow Show, "I am gay." The Army quickly began discharge proceedings against him. Also joining us is Denny Mayer. He is a Vietnam War veteran, National Public Affairs Officer, and Vice President of Veterans Affairs for American Veterans for Equal Rights. Joining us a little bit later, Navy Commander Zoe Dunning, retired, who made history 14 years ago when she came out as a lesbian and won her discharge case. Here's our number. Join us quickly, if you could, if you have comments on this. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, the author of a curriculum about geography done in a very interesting way. He's a former teacher for 25 years and author of If America Were a Village, a book about the people of the United States, and another book, If the World Were a Village. So that's coming up, hour number two. Our number for you to speak, we're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and if we're close to having that repealed, and why we still have it. 800-486-8655 is the number. Louise from Hillsboro is our first caller. Hi, Louise.
Hello. I just wanted to tell a quick story, and that was that years ago when Colonel Kammermeyer came out, there was a magazine, People magazine, sitting on the desk with the story, and one of the fellows I worked with came up behind me. I knew he was military, and I was all prepared to I hear a bunch of garbage about that. And he looked at it and he said, look, he said, you know, I knew her and she was great. And this crap has got to stop. So that's the story. And I was so shocked because I was expecting lots of trouble. So it's pretty impressive.
Lieutenant Troy.
Well, I think it's very important, Louise, that you bring up that. Why do we expect people in our military to be homophobic? I think that's, in a lot of ways, part of the problem. There's so many people who assume that people in certain branches or people that are the ones that join this volunteer force have to be either so uneducated, unprofessional, or homophobic that they wouldn't be able to handle diversity in their units. And I think that in itself, when people take that, you know, it's one thing to get a response on a personal level like you do, which is very encouraging, but it's a wholly different thing to base policy off of those very insulting insinuations that, you know, we would assume that those in our military, in the American armed forces, are not as professional or not as educated as all of our NATO allies. And so something that you see today, a very fascinating thing, is that a lot of the policymakers are basing their policies based on this very insulting thing on our soldier. I think it hurts our soldiers. And one of the most important points is that when you talk about 13,000 soldiers who have been kicked out of the military because they're gay, it's not the gay soldiers who are the victims. It's those 13,000 units that are less capable, that are crippled because they have one less member of their team who can deploy with them. Really, when somebody leaves the unit, it breaks apart that unit. It breaks apart almost as if it was a family, and a family member has been stripped away.
Thanks, Louise, for your call. We go to Dan from Milwaukee. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Yes, I served 22 years in the Navy and submarines, nuclear power, and I had to hide my entire career that I was gay.
22 years.
22 years, yes.
Denny? Respond to that.
Well, this is all too common. I actually interviewed a commander, a skipper of a nuclear submarine, a fellow who actually directed the building of the first nuclear Trident submarine. I think it was a Captain Hall, Steve Hall, yes, in California, who also hid his homosexuality for most of his career, although towards the end of it, he was open, and nobody cared. This is you know, all too sad. We've got the highest-ranking retired out gay service member, Admiral Steinman of the Coast Guard, who is quite a spokesman about issues as well. We've got generals, two generals, and quite a few others who've recently come out in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Hopefully this will change, because we've got people throughout the ranks who've been serving, from the lowliest private first class, Dr. Frank Kameny, who served in combat in World War II, to yourself and admirals. This has really got to change. We do have a national organization supporting our troops, our lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender troops, and advocating for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's American Veterans for Equal Rights, and we're there to serve you.
Thanks so much for the call. Let me ask both of you, and then it will let you go a little over with both of you, I'm sure you know. There is opposition, as you know, to the repeal last spring. More than 1,000 retired officers signed a letter that was organized by FLAG and general officers for the military, urging the president to uphold the law. Your response to the part of this letter: we believe that imposing this burden on our men and women in uniform would undermine recruiting and retention, impact leadership at all levels, have adverse effects on the willingness of parents who lend their sons and daughters to military service, and eventually break the all-volunteer force. Lieutenant Choi?
Well, I think it's very fascinating when you look at some of the people who signed that petition, which was put together by Elaine Donnelly of the center, the so-called Center for Military Readiness. It's just a political organization. She herself has never served in the military and has an agenda of her own. She also is against women serving in the military, and in the 40s she would have been against black people being integrated into the unit. A lot of very same arguments that were used during racial integration, you see, are being parroted here, repeated over like a broken record. We knew that it was wrong then, and it's wrong now. When you're talking about imposing anything on our soldiers, I wonder about the morality of any of these people who are saying this, if in fact that's what they're saying. They would rather impose a policy of lying and deception and feel happy that that's what they're doing. What kind of a message does that send to the parents of any future soldier who wants to serve their country as they're sitting around a breakfast table and they talk about, I don't know if I want my son or daughter to serve in the military, and they're having this conversation with that son or daughter? What are they going to be thinking about? They're going to be thinking about the safety and the well-being of that son or daughter to go to Iraq and Afghanistan with the full resources and everything that that child needs in order to serve their country and win a war. If any of these officers were truly officers that cared about the mission, they would put that first. And they would put the concerns of those parents. Those parents want to see their children fully equipped. They don't want to see them have to serve with folks who have to lie about who they are. They don't want to have their units stripped away of, particularly in a counterinsurgency effort, linguists and people who can help with the reconstruction, people who can help the allies and the natives in those countries like Afghanistan, like Iraq, make their country better. Why would you send soldiers overseas that are less prepared and less resourced because of a policy of lying? When you talk about recruitment and retention, furthermore, I think you can look at all of the other countries in the world who have done this in 1999 and 2003, Canada and Great Britain and Israel have repealed their discrimination and have allowed people to serve openly and honestly, and they've had no issues with recruitment or retention. In fact, in Canada and Great Britain, they were saying that two-thirds, more than 67% of the entire armed forces would quit. All of them would just up and leave. And when you look at what happened in those countries once their discrimination was lifted, there was maybe two people who left, and one was going to leave anyway. So say that one person that left the military, as all these generals, these thousand generals, are saying gloom and doom, this is what's going to happen. That one person that put the mission second and put his homophobic ideas before all of the other things of national security, is that the one guy that you want on your team, the guy that's going to be so scared about serving with just somebody who's honest about their orientation that he's not willing to go to war anymore? I'm sorry, but as an infantry platoon leader, I would say good riddance. That guy does not need to be on my team.
Hmm. Thank you both so much for being with us. Thank you. Our thanks to First Lieutenant Dan Choi, graduate of West Point, Arabic linguist, Iraq War veteran, served for 10 years under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, announced on public television that he was gay, and the Army began discharge proceedings against him. Denny Meyer is a Vietnam War veteran and the National Public Affairs Officer and Vice President of Veterans Affairs for American Veterans for Equal Rights. And he served as a gay man in a time when discrimination was certainly much more rampant than it appears to be now. Joining us the next part of our program, we'll be speaking with Zoe Dunning. Zoe has a very interesting history here. Zoe is a retired Navy commander and lesbian. She publicly came out in January of 1993 as a political statement in support of then-President-elect Bill Clinton's campaign pledge to allow gays and lesbians to serve openly and honestly in the military. She says she was one of the first cases under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and one of the very few exceptions who unanimously won her discharge hearing. And she'll talk about that. It enabled her to serve the final 14 years of her military career as an open lesbian. We continue our phone calls for our guests, and here's how you reach us. It is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, for you to join our conversation. Thank you very much, Zoe Dunning, for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you. Well, let's go back to 1993 for a moment. You came out publicly in that year as a political statement. Can you tell us why you came out at that time and what was the political statement?
Sure. Bill Clinton had just been elected president. He had not taken office yet. And he had a campaign pledge that he was going to allow gays to serve in the military without fear of discharge. As it became closer to his inauguration date, he started to hem and haw a little bit on it. So I participated in a political rally outside a naval air station in California. And the purpose of the rally was to encourage Clinton to do the right thing and fulfill his campaign pledge. And at that rally, I spoke, and in my speech, I came out as both a naval officer and a lesbian. I was a lieutenant in the Naval Reserves at the time. And as a result of that, they began discharge proceedings against me.
Mm-hmm. And you won your case. You say that you're one of the very few exceptions who unanimously won your discharge hearing. Was it a laborious process? And how did you turn out to be so wildly successful?
Well, it was definitely a laborious process. What happened was, I violated the policy before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because Clinton had not yet taken office. So I had to go through a discharge hearing under the prior policy where simply, you know, being gay was enough grounds for discharge. And at that hearing, the board had found against me and had recommended my discharge. So I was in the process of being discharged when Clinton announced the next month, Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Oh.
And so they were in this quandary where we've convicted her of basically violating a policy that's now going to be supplanted by this new policy. So while that was all getting put into place, I continued to serve. And then I had a second discharge hearing under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I was one of the very first discharge cases under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There wasn't very much guidance on what it takes to prosecute or defend one of these cases. And my defense strategy was to take the stand and say, you know, when I said that I'm a lesbian, I'm talking about myself and who I am. I was not talking about conduct in any way. And the Board of Officers found unanimously in my favor that rebutted the presumption, and I was allowed to stay in. Subsequently, the Pentagon issued a memorandum that said, going forward, that defense strategy cannot be used by anyone else. So essentially, I was one of the first cases. I was allowed to serve, and then my defense strategy was made unable to be used by anyone else.
Hmm. And then you went on to serve 14 years. Those who are opposed to repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell talk about, you know, how the morale is going to be diminished in the military. The parents are going to be worried about sending their sons and daughters into the military. But I guess there wasn't any great morale loss due to your presence, right?
No, in fact, quite the opposite. Before I came out, I very much had to keep hidden my, you know, my personal life from my work life, and that meant that I did not socialize with my fellow unit members, with my shipmates. I kept my private life very separate and isolated, and so I didn't have great bonds with my fellow service members. After I was able to come out, I didn't have anything to hide anymore, and became much closer, had much stronger relationships, and my units continued to perform and excel. Just about every unit I was served in after that received some sort of a commendation or a citation for excellent performance. And I myself was promoted twice since I came out and continue to receive medals and recognition.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we're fairly close, and I'm wondering how you think it should be achieved, to a total repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Well, it was a law that was enacted by Congress, so it has to be repealed by Congress for it to be a sustainable change. We are, I think, 180-something co-sponsors on a bill currently in the House of Representatives to repeal the law, and we need to get 218. So we're getting close. I think President Obama can take a bit of a stronger leadership role in sending a clear signal that he wants this done, and he wants this done in this Congress. I have high hopes that it can be done in this Congress, but it really needs to happen within the next year. After that, when you get into the second 2 years of a president's term, Congress gets much more conservative, and they don't tend to take on these controversial issues as much.
Mm-hmm. And what about the presidential leadership on this? He's made some public statements here, but what keeps him from being really strong on the issue, do you think?
Well, I mean, I want to express my appreciation for Obama for even making public statements. It's been the first time we've had a president step forward and say, you know, we're going to make this happen. So I want to start with that appreciation and recognition. And for right now, those are words, and we really need some action. So I think the White House is starting to take more of a leadership role. They're starting to have meetings with senior members of the Senate and Congress to figure out how we can do this. But in the end, he is the commander-in-chief. It's great that he consults with the Pentagon, but in the end, it's his decision. And I think that he's just, by nature, a fairly cautious politician, and he likes collaboration, and he wants consensus. And so I think he's attempting to achieve that. But in the end, it's his watch, it's his military, and he needs to take the leadership role.
Mm-hmm. Here's something you've talked about that I think is interesting that's not widely discussed. This Palm Center study of the Canadian military finding the percentage of military women who experienced sexual harassment dropped 46% after their ban was lifted. Women were now free to report assaults without fear they would be accused of being a lesbian.
There's definitely a linkage between bans on gay service and sexual harassment against women in the military.
Hmm.
I personally experienced it. I saw it around me. When you have sort of a secret, in a sense, that you're trying to hide, people can hold that against you and hold it over your head. And so you get in situations where you may be serving alongside of a female comrade who you might suspect is a lesbian. You're not sure, really you don't care, they're doing a good job, everything's smooth, everything's good. But let's say someone comes around and, you know, maybe asks her out on a date, she declines, or maybe he starts to harass her and she reports him, or maybe she writes a bad evaluation of him, or maybe she gets promoted ahead of him. Suddenly there's vendetta, suddenly there's, you know, I want to get back at you, I want to strike back at you, I want to bring the focus and attention on you and not on my misbehavior or my performance. And so you do get situations of lesbian baiting where a guy will harass a woman, she threatens to turn him in for harassment, and instead he threatens to turn her in as a violation of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Whether she's lesbian or not, we do have situations of heterosexual women getting discharged under this policy.
Let's pause for just a moment and welcome phone calls for you. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest this part of the show is Zoe Dunning, retired Navy commander and lesbian, who publicly came out in January of 93 as a political statement in support of then-President-elect Bill Clinton's campaign pledge to allow gays and lesbians to serve openly in the military. We have one line open if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we start our phone calls, Erica from Milwaukee. Hi, Erica.
Hello. I just wanted to say, you talked about earlier in the show how about parents' willingness to hand their children over to the military. I just have to say that I, as a parent, have a harder time handing my child over to the military, knowing that they're going to fight for freedom in other countries when we don't even hand our own citizens liberty. That's all I wanted to say.
Zoe.
I think that's a great point. We're trying to represent democracy around the globe, and yet we keep fully qualified members of our military out for no good reason other than the prejudice of others in the unit. So I think that's a really great point.
What is it about the United States, do you think, Zoe, that it keeps us from enacting a repeal here, which has been done, as you mentioned, in other countries fairly recently? Why have they been able to repeal their ban and we haven't?
That's a good question. I think there's definitely, I think some of the religious overtones, I mean, I think that sort of Puritan history in the, you know, United States, it can be a barrier and get in the way. I think we just have issues in general around, you know, sexuality and homosexuality. We can get kind of spun up on that. And we also consider ourselves the strongest military in the world. And so we don't want to do anything to risk or jeopardize that. So anything that might feel like a social experiment gets people very concerned. But they just have to look back at history and see the integration of African Americans and the integration of women and see that it just widens the pool of qualified candidates and makes us even stronger.
Erica, thanks for the call. Michael from Prairie du Chien. Hi.
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 Yeah, one of the things I don't understand is, you know, There's so much around this homophobic scenario in the military, but why don't you take the slant? I mean, what you want to do is eliminate sexuality altogether. Why not shower together like some of the other countries and take all the mystery out of this? Because a lot of this is centered around just who's thinking thoughts in the shower, and if you can do that, then I would say this would be fine.
Well, I'm not sure that that's the answer. In fact, the military is actually going more to creating greater privacy for folks in the showers. But I think what we need to point out is that our service members are showering alongside gays and lesbians right now. It's not like we're going to introduce gays and lesbians to the military. We're simply preventing them from being scared that they'll be discharged. So we will, after implementation of Don't Ask, you know, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we will continue to prosecute, you know, behavior and conduct issues. If someone does step out of line and is inappropriate, that gets prosecuted just like any other type of inappropriate misconduct. So I hear what you're saying, but I also think that, you know, we do need to take the mystery out of it.
Thank you, Michael. Dave is next. Hi, Dave.
Well,
yes, Dave, go ahead.
Well, I'm a white male Caucasian, 64 years of age, and I spent 26 years in the military and four of it in the Army. And we had open showers, and we had a whole mess of different things. With, I'm not in favor of gays in the military, you know, it's, especially in the Army and Marine Corps. You got some pretty cozy arrangements when you're out in the field where you share a sleeping area with somebody sometimes. We have something called a shelter half, two of them. Put together equal one little tent. You know, I got out of the Army in 1970 and they invented this word homophobic. And it just sounds terrible. Just like honky. The blacks come up with honky, the gays come up with normal people are homophobic. Well, I'm not homophobic. But when I was in the service, I just don't want to sleep. You know, I don't think it's right, they have to sleep into somebody that's gay. All, you know, they have an agenda, too.
Zoe.
Well, I'm not sure what that agenda is. I think their agenda is that they want to serve their country. I'm actually from Wisconsin. I'm from the Milwaukee area.
Oh, you are?
I did. I got my nomination to the Naval Academy from Jim Sensenbrenner,
oh,
ironically. And so I, you know, I wanted to serve my country. That was my agenda. And, you know, homophobia, I agree that it can sometimes be used as a weapon against folks who might disagree. But if you break it down to its base, homophobia means fear of gays. What I'm hearing Dan say is, you know, I'm afraid to sleep next to a gay for fear of what they might do to me. And as I mentioned to the last caller's question, you know, we have no intention of having a different standard of conduct. It's the same rules, the same standards of conduct. If you're lying next to someone and they are inappropriate or do something, absolutely, you know, bring them up on charges, prosecute them. I'm not asking for special treatment. But just because you're afraid to sleep next to me, even though I'm not going to do anything to you, shouldn't be grounds to prevent me from serving my country.
Thanks for the call, Dave. Scott from Appleton. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Zoe, I was listening to you talk earlier. I kind of objected to a word you used, and you used the word paranoia to describe someone. I think a more fitting word would be ignorance. Using the word paranoia, I think you're cutting somebody a little bit too much slack. And on a side note, if you don't care for gay marriage, why then don't marry a gay person? And by the way, I am not gay.
Zoe.
You know, I ditto.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Jackie from Manitowoc. Hi.
Hi. I'm just calling just in response to some of these questions in regard to gays in the military. You know, I guess my question is, you know, we have people that work in the police forces, that work on, you know, as firefighters. This issue doesn't seem to be an issue with those people, and they're putting their lives in danger every day as well. And just really confused as to how our military can have this stance when other agencies that are doing the same type of work, you know, if that were to come up, it would be considered, you know, a problem, and there would be legal action taken. So just wanted to make that comment.
All right, Jackie.
Thanks.
Thank you. Zoe, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, just a quick response of, you know, that analogy has been made. You know, firefighters are in living quarters together, working together in very tense situations together that require tremendous trust and good, you know, esprit de corps. And they have allowed, you know, gays to serve for quite some time now. So I think there's that analogy as well as the analogy made earlier in the show about foreign military. So I think I don't think that we are so unique as the United States military that we, and I think our leadership can handle, you know, this transition. I think it's selling our leadership short to say, if you repeal this law, you know, all hell will break loose within our military and will not be able to be effective. I think our leadership can do this, and we, you know, we are a strong military. We do know how to, you know, take orders and carry out difficult things.
Thanks for the call. Our guests, the first part of the program, Dan and Denny, were talking, and they were people of different eras, so that Denny was serving in Vietnam back in the 60s and 70s, and he just talked about this massive discrimination that against people who were suspected to be gay because, you know, then it was totally illegal. And Dan described quite a different military where it's just no big deal now. And I'm wondering if you think there's been a real sea change in acceptance.
Oh, absolutely. There's been a sea change in acceptance. And I think the polling has demonstrated that. You know, even within, and I don't know if this was quoted earlier, but, you know, even conservatives in America think that this policy should be changed. Polling of folks in the military have shown greater acceptance. And a lot of that has to do with the, you know, the new generation that's coming in. The Vietnam-era generation, homosexuality was something that was not discussed, was not, you know, present. It was disdained publicly. That was acceptable. And now we are the Will and Grace generation. Now we have, you know, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and Will and Grace and gay and lesbian characters on television. And there's been sort of a groundswell of, you know, beginning to accept gays and lesbians as an integral part of society, and that's reflected in the military. So I do think that it's changed tremendously. The junior enlisted, the junior officers are much less upset about the idea of repeal than some of the more senior folks.
Mm-hmm. Ray from New London, hi.
She made the statement earlier that if someone is sexually advanced on or assaulted, that they can, that's a legal matter. Well, I'm pretty sure that quite a few of the Marines and those in the Army would not report it because they don't want to be accused of being gay or lesbian by bringing charges up on someone else. Also, this is a moral issue, and morals, you can't vote morals as in, because this generation may vote it's okay, next generation may vote it's not. but it's definitely a moral issue, and I think that there's also freedom of association, and now our freedom of speech is being going to be impacted by this new legislation. Thanks.
Zoe.
Well, he brought up a couple of points. Let me address just a few of them.
Yeah, we've only got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, he brings it up as a moral issue. I'm not sure what his morals are. My morals are about respect for one another. And so I think that this is a disrespectful policy, and so it actually goes against, you know, my morals. So, and he says freedom of association. Well, within the military, you don't really get freedom of association. It is America's melting pot where you have, Jews from Brooklyn joining African-Americans from the South, joining poor people from the Appalachia, joining Chicago, Irish. I mean, it's just a melting pot. And
on that note, we have to say goodbye. Zoe, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Zoe Dunning from Wisconsin originally, retired Navy commander and lesbian, who announced that she was a lesbian in January of 1993. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for on-air production, and to you for your calls. We'll return.